Oh shit, guys. My phone battery right now, 69.
Nice.
Do you know that feeling when everyone is talking about a movie that you haven't seen? Have you ever felt compelled to make some vague comments just so you can join in the conversation? Well, what if you were in too deep? Do you think you could convince everyone that you'd seen it? Or do you think your version would be so much better that no one would care? Here at Faking Movies, we're always the ones who haven't seen the movie.
Anything you can do, I can do better. I can do anything better than you.
Oh, you can.
Yes, I can.
Oh, you can.
Yes, I can.
Oh, you can.
Yes, I can. Yes, I can.
Well, anyway, hey, welcome back, everyone, to Faking Movies. Here it is. Yeah. Ooh, and this is how the episode starts, not with a cry, but with a fart noise.
Isn't it not with a shout, but with a whimper? So
That's what I was going for.
Yeah, but okay, well.
Well,
anyway,
seems appropriate in this context. Yeah.
Thank you for our traditional fart noise to kick off ceremonies, Seth.
Naturally.
Yeah. Also here with me this week is, of course, Zach. How are you, Zach?
Hey, everybody. I'm lovely. Thank you for asking.
That's so nice. So nice. So we don't really have much housekeeping or announcements this week. I just want to remind everyone, check out our lovely new website, fakingmovies.com. We got that .com money now, so, you know, put it to good use.
No. Someone has that .com money. Yeah. I don't know if it's us. It's
probably not.
A member of the Faking Movies family had that .com money. So
yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool. Well, so Seth's doing it this week. Seth, you wanna tell us all them bits?
Okay. So what you got? So the movie that I'm faking this week is called It Could Happen to You.
Yes.
And the actors that you gave me were Bridget Fonda, mm-hmm. Rosie Perez.
Yeah, I feel like you're leading up to something.
It's true, maybe.
This is not the order I would have gone with, but okay. All right.
It's Bridget Fonda, Rosie Perez, Isaac Hayes, Stanley Tucci, the Tooch.
The Tooch!
And,
Tooch is
of
loose.
Course, Nicolas Cage.
God be praised.
New year and our first Nicky Cage. Oh, boy.
How did it take us 29 to get to our Lord and Savior, Nicolas?
It's pretty strange.
It's crazy.
I'm surprised. So we'll see if I can live up to some Nick Cage styles insanity in this thing that I came up with less than an hour ago.
Behind the curtain.
Always the consummate professional.
Yeah. There's, I have two plots, though the first one kinda I realized ended up being the same as the novel that I based my master's thesis on, so
okay.
Kinda had to backtrack that as soon as I recognized that I was just writing that.
Alright.
So the first one is and this one's the short one that isn't well thought out. It could happen to you, but it's just the letter U. And And as we start the film, we zoom into the U of the title, and then that U is you with a string of numbers behind it on a cubicle. And so let's say that the numbers are U571, because I couldn't come up with any other numbers off the top of my head. And you know, Nick Cage is the eponymous U571, and then it just kind of devolves into a general dystopian, you know, matrixy equilibrium sort of thing where you know, he gets woken up from being a sheep and fights against the fascists and blah, 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 and eventually ends up being lobotomized. It's not very interesting at this point because it's been done a lot.
So right. Is The Matrix just not funny Office Space? Hold on.
Oh,
I thought
shit.
You were going for Office Space in the beginning.
I mean, there are parts of it, I guess. Yeah. Like,
okay.
I feel like it kind of works.
What novel is this? Because if it's The Matrix, stop the podcast and let's talk about that for an hour.
No, it's actually the novel called We by Yevgeny Zamyatin. It's what Orwell even said that he based 1984 off of.
Because
it was written in 1911, and is basically 1984, just written 30 years earlier. It's like nearly identical, and my whole thesis was about color theory and the relative meanings of the different color terms that come up in the story. Yellow being chaos, blue being order, green being revolution. It's interesting stuff, but
yeah, I remember when you were writing this.
Yeah,
are you by chance on the job market? Because damn, like. I'd probably hire you.
Yeah. Anybody need to do some, cognitive linguistics with color theory and association?
Ooh, you're giving away too much. Now everybody's going to find you. You getting doxxed.
There's only so many Seth fart noises that are going to be on the job market this year. Someone will find you.
That's true. Yeah, unfortunately. Me and Seth McFartland?
Ooh,
I mean, okay. I think he'd appreciate that. Yeah,
quite. Anyway, now we'll get into my other movie. Because that one, is just kind of your typical dystopia sort of thing, which I really enjoy those movies, but it wasn't terribly interesting. So, let's get into It Could Happen to You.
I noticed that you pronounced happen strangely. What are you cooking up for us here?
We're like forensic detectives. Like any little thing. We're like, what's this motherfucker doing this time? All right.
I'll be Grissom and you be Horatio Caine from CSI Miami.
I would love to be.
It looks like Seth is going to be a jackass again.
we'll get to that later, guys. let me tell my damn story.
What old Icelandic word is hap-in, actually, that it's gonna tie your movie together? Like,
no, the whole title's an anagram for something stupid, I can tell already. there's like a Seth bag of tricks, and that's in there for sure. Yeah,
yeah. It's I take copious. I'm done. I can't. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah.
Well,
how impressive would it have been if I came up with a whole acronym, though?
Yeah, it would have been quite impressive. But hey, it's like, how impressive would it have been if I won the lottery?
Not that impressive. Okay. It would be lucky, but, like, I don't know.
Ah, well, interestingly, luck plays a large role in my story.
Okay.
Interesting indeed. Go on.
It could happen to you. So,
God
Nick
damn
Cage...
it, Seth.
Speak like a normal person or this is going to take 3 fucking hours.
Well, in this movie film, Nick Cage is again an office worker, much like my previous film. And like Bridget Fonda is his work buddy, sort of like work wife sort of situation. They're really quite close. And Rosie Perez is their boss, who's having an affair with Bridget Fonda, but that doesn't come up till later.
Oh,
cool.
So we do some basic background stuff. We establish that Nick's life is like comfortable, but not very exciting or spectacular in any way, shape, or form. It's just, you know, general middle office worker sort of shtick that we get so often in movies.
He's a regular, he's a drone.
Yeah, yeah. So we come to, of course, Nick Cage looking for more excitement in his life, and he goes to somewhere, let's say, I don't know, some kind of not racist but still exotic location in the city. I don't know how to do this well.
Like a downtown jazz club.
Yeah, I mean, like, basically, I don't want to end up in that cliche-ish, like, that Gremlins-esque Chinatown shop of horrors sort of situation, but still, we kind of need to end up there, because okay. He ends up in Isaac Hayes's shop, who offers him
I thought you were trying to avoid the trope of, like, a non-white character teaching a white character how to be cool.
No,
but it sounds like we're falling right into that.
No, we're really, really not. No, not this time. Nope. Because okay. It's about to go off the rails. And
it's a Nick Cage movie, so
yep.
Go on.
So Isaac Hayes offers Nick Cage a pen and pencil set for his desk. And he, of course, buys it because he's a lame-o office worker and needs a stationery set, naturally. And so we continue on. We explore maybe the romance a bit of Bridget and Rosie, but that isn't terribly important to the plot. And, but Nick Cage keeps seeing Isaac Hayes, like, in the periphery of his vision, in, like, crazy places. He just sees Isaac Hayes looking crazy, just showing up all over the place. Okay. It's just like Isaac Hayes peeping around a corner.
Well, it's his store. Maybe he thought he was like robbing him or something.
No. This is back in the real world. This is after Nick Cage purchased his stationery set.
Yeah, this is
so
later.
He thinks he's like a ghost or something.
Well, it's something.
Or he's just a creepy weirdo.
He's just a creepy weirdo for the most part. But Nick hasn't gone Nick crazy yet. And
all right, we talked about this.
So he starts using the stationery set, and little by little he notices that the thing he writes start to become real. He fucks up some major figures on an account and wrote the wrong numbers down, only for them to suddenly become the right numbers. He draws little doodles, and after that, and, like, after he comes back from the toilet or whatever, he sees some of those little doodles, like, scurrying around the corner out of the corner of his eye. Like, ooh. It's nothing, like, he can legitimately see, but it's all these little peripheral blips all over the screen.
So is this, isn't there, like, a Being John Malkovich kind of thing in here? Isn't there something about, like, typewriter and, like, stuff comes true, or am I making that up?
Is are you thinking of Stranger Than Fiction?
Oh, maybe it's that.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some elements of that in here.
I mean, there were no, like, doodles or anything. Yeah,
this is cool. There's physical manifestation of things that are occurring, and also that ability to apparently rewrite reality, which is already screwy. And so he starts noticing this sort of thing happening more and more the more he uses the stationery set, and we see Isaac Hayes just skulking like Macaulay Culkin around all the time. until we enter Stanley Tucci, who's also suddenly appearing in the background everywhere.
Perfect.
Tooch!
Count me in.
and so we see, like, Nick Cage is drawing more and more stuff, and he doesn't see any immediate results, and he just assumed that what he all saw before was him going crazy. And he has a crush on Bridget Fonda and gifts her the, like, ornate stuff, like the stationery of the pen and pencil, and who then re-gifts it to Rosie. And then all of Nick Cage's stuff starts, like, coming alive. And, it gets a little more chaotic here. You see, the Tooch is also trying to kill Nick Cage. And they have, like, a crazy confrontation where he's like, give me the Hap pen! And Nick...
Oh, you son of a bitch.
I have to go. I'm sorry.
Podcast is canceled.
You guys gotta do this one without me, because Fuck.
Well,
that's actually not bad. That's not bad.
Well,
that's, like,
Hap is a mid-13th century term for,
here we go,
you know, luck or event, and can be both a noun and a verb. So,
are you fucking kidding me? Really? 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 I thought it was just a punny name for your fucking pen because it makes things happen. You asshole.
I don't know which is worse, honestly. No, all right. All honesty, this is the charm. This is the charm of a Seth movie. This is
I'm
what
gonna
we're,
throw you in a goddamn garbage can next time I see you.
Oh dear.
Proceed so, with your movie.
The Tooch says, "Give me the Hap pen," and Nick Cage is like, "What the hell are you talking about?" And Nick Cage is it up pretty strong. Oh, yeah. And then at this point, like, things aren't as well fleshed out. Things get more and more, like, magical realism, and then more fantasy, and then eventually just become very surreal. And Bridget and Rosie are also using the pen, so all of their creations are also showing up and screwing with things. And it turns out that the Tooch was used to have the Hap pen, and was given... and was given the Hap pen by Isaac Hayes, who turns out to be a trickster god, because I feel like a pre-Scientology Isaac Hayes could really, like, dig into that sort of insanity. Sure. So Isaac Hayes has been around for millennia, gifting random mortals the Hap pen, and Tooch was once gifted this and, like, went crazy, and now, of course, our Nick Cage has gone crazy in his particular overacting style. But it's mostly just Isaac Hayes likes to give it out to mortals to watch them, like, just to mess with them, which is, I enjoy that kind of trope.
Yeah, sure. I mean, when you're an immortal being, you need to entertain yourself somehow.
Certainly.
Yeah. So, wait, does Tooch want it? He wants it back.
He wants it back.
He perceives that it has power.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So does anybody, use this to try to manifest millions of dollars or something? Like, it seems like the first thing any character would do is, like, how can I, like, exploit this to...
How am I going
to
monetize this?
Yeah, I
right, like the thing we do every week. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that could show up, and then we could show that Nick Cage has a heart of gold by just not wanting to do that and doing other things, and really, like, ingratiate him to the audience, which I think is kind of necessary, because
yep,
otherwise
totally
it's just Nick Cage being a weirdo.
Yeah, I love that too, but yeah, sure.
Yeah, and then there's, like, some kind of climactic event, like, it doesn't really matter what it is, where the Tooch makes something evil with the pen after stealing it from our three protagonists, and Nick Cage, like, gets to overact the shit out of an action sequence, which is pretty great. Like, negotiating with the Tooch and all sorts of stuff, and, you know, that just kind of resolves itself however you would expect in this sort of general movie.
Ooh,
and then we finish...
Can there be a scene when Nick Cage is, like, running away from something and he has to, like, draw a door to get out and it's, like, a cartoon?
Oh, shit, yeah.
That's not bad.
Absolutely. We gotta Who Framed Roger Rabbit this up a little bit.
Yeah. There you go, okay.
And we finish with Nick Cage waking up at his desk again, thinking it was all a dream. Until he sees a little doodle come to life around the corner of his eyes, and he sees Isaac Hayes walk in as the new owner of whatever company. Dun dun dun!
Ooh, okay.
End of film.
Sure.
That's good. I mean, that's a good twist ending. That sets up a sequel. That's, yeah, perfect.
Yeah. So that was my version of It Could Hap Pen
Stop
to
it.
You.
Man, as much as you are a shitlord, I like that a bunch. Like, that's genuinely not bad.
No, it was actually incredibly restrained for one of your movies, too. Like...
On the Seth scale, yeah.
Yeah, well, I've been sick the last couple of days, so I didn't really have my crazy mojo going.
Yeah. Gotcha.
No, it was tempered, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Seth, do you want to hear the IMDb synopsis?
Oh, I sure do.
Because sure. You really you hit a lot of thematic stuff, actually.
Hmm. Also, when you started, I thought you were going to do the plot of the movie.
Oh,
I
shit, know.
Really again. Leading up for it, and then it took a left turn pretty quick.
Oh yeah,
good.
It could happen to you. 1994.
94. Okay.
A police officer promises to share his lottery ticket with a waitress in lieu of a tip.
Huh.
That's it. Also, mm-hmm. that happens in the first 10 minutes of the movie.
mm-hmm. Huh.
Yeah. All right. So let's, for starters, say 94 was absolute peak Nick Cage.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is circa The Rock, circa Con Air.
Jesus.
It's like right it's a little after before. Some of the more... Before. Both of those came out in mm-hmm. 95, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a little bit after some of the like full insanity ones that are yes. just complete bonkers. Yeah.
So this is a prelude to classic Nick Cage.
Yeah, but...
Yeah.
He plays it straight.
Oh,
it's the
what?
Weirdest role he's ever had. Yeah,
this is this movie is so it's like Nick in a cage is really what this movie is.
Oh, like, no.
yeah it's very strange. I have written down the cast in this is phenomenal. We've been talking about this all week.
Yeah.
But the casting is just like slightly off for every actor.
Interesting.
So, like, oh, you thought so?
Nick Cage. Yeah, I think like almost everybody. Well, except for Isaac Hayes. I think he plays the Isaac Hayes role.
Ah,
because sure.
he's like a trickster god. Yeah. Uh-huh.
He's an immortal trickster god. Yes.
He's not an immortal trickster god, but he does a lot of like slinking around corners and like showing up in the background a lot.
He's an omniscient narrator, from what I could tell. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well, he does have the voice for it, so.
He certainly does, yeah. He's the obvious choice of all of them, yeah.
Yeah.
So Nick Cage is, again, as we said, very genuine and, like, not insane, which is his whole thing, which is what we all love him for.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Rosie Perez plays, like, a dick. Like, she's not cool in this movie at all, but she's also, like, the wife character and, like, egregiously Puerto Rican, which is her thing.
She's very like vibrant and brassy, and
yeah.
We can get into this, Zach, as we talk about how the movie actually plays out, but the whole time I think they want you to think she's a villain, but really only until the end. I don't think she really does anything that's like unreasonable, like at the very end.
I mean, she's like immediately sort of greedy and like kind of not super cool to Nick, who loves her unconditionally. Like, I don't know. So I would contrast it with White Men Can't Jump.
Nice.
Which is another fabulous movie. Mm-hmm. Where she is actually kind of endearing, and in this she's not as much. So the Tooch is a bad guy. No. Which is baffling. Like, never that.
Yeah,
that's impossible.
Incredibly small role though. Like, he's he's not in it very much.
Weirdly small. It may have been before his prime.
I mean,
like,
it was
that's
yeah.
a bunch, but
that's kind of how he was in my movie too. Like,
it's mm-hmm. true, but like, it's not. I mean, that's not my Tooch. Not on my watch.
No, not my Tooch.
Hashtag not my Tooch.
yeah. Let's get that trending.
Smells like a T-shirt. Yeah.
He is so fucking cut in this movie, though.
Really?
Yes. Oh. He has a remarkable amount of hair and also abdominal muscles. Yes.
Oh. Wow.
He looks he looks like what I, like, the version of me that, like, drunk me sees in the mirror when I'm like, flexy, flexy.
Singing Born in the USA to himself.
So he's like, Stanley Tucci, but he's like Stanley from A Streetcar Named Desire if played by Ned Flanders.
Yes, but hairier.
Okay.
he really
sure, yeah.
He has the upper body of a mid-90s Shawn Michaels.
Wow.
For our wrestling fans
out
there.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, no, that yeah. Yep.
All right.
Including the same hair.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Gross.
And then I don't know anything about Bridget Fonda, but so that's like 3 out of 4 that I thought, like, again, like, this cast is just unstoppable, but it was just, it didn't fit my model of what
it was
all these
just
people
a little
were,
off. Which, yeah.
Yeah.
So I do want to mention some of the other people in the cast that we didn't give you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wendell Pierce. He is okay. Nick Cage's cop partner.
Sure.
Which, of course, he's a cop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see. Seymour Cassell is in it. He plays a fairly pivotal role later on. Classic, like, Hollywood comedian and Oscar winner Red Buttons plays a...
What?
Yeah, yeah. He plays Nick Cage's divorce attorney, and... The best thing about him is they got famous classic Hollywood comedian Red Buttons to play a role in this movie, and he tells no jokes. Nothing.
And is in it for 20 seconds? Yeah. Well, maybe a couple minutes, yeah.
Oh,
Richard Jenkins is also in this movie.
Okay.
Also as an attorney. A real mean, shitty one, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
A role he plays a lot. That's like one of his typecast things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I guess they got him right, but
yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, so I guess quick plot. So Nick Cage is a cop. They go to a diner. They have to leave before their food comes. He doesn't have tip money, and he just bought a lottery ticket, and he goes, If this wins, I'll come back and split it with you. And then him and Rosie Perez do win, along with like a bowling team with a bunch of dudes from The Sopranos.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. And so then he has this moral dilemma. Rosie Perez is when she turns evil, because she's like, fuck that noise. And he's Nick Cage is like infinite moral good in this movie. Like he feels very compelled to go do the right thing.
Hmm.
And so he goes down and is like...
Which is a movie that Rosie Perez was in.
Yeah, a very good one, in fact, yes.
Mm-hmm, that's true.
Yeah. A far better movie.
Oh.
Yeah, one might say, yes. So he goes down and is like still kind of wavering and says like, okay, I will either give you a good tip or half of the lotto winnings I had from last night. She doesn't obviously know what he won, and so she is having like a terrible day, kind of a terrible life, and just goes, oh, fuck it, give me the lotto winnings, because I know you didn't win. And he goes, I'm so glad you picked that, and then tells her that she won, I don't know, what, $2 million?
$2 million, yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. So at that point, then there's
they
a lot kind of
become
between...
like darlings of the New York Post. Is the New York Post is the, yeah.
Ew.
Yeah. Well,
it's the newspaper that clearly sponsored this movie.
Oh, it's one of those. I gotcha.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So it's an endearing story and everybody's into it. And then, like, Rosie Perez starts being sort of worse and worse. And at this point, I wrote down there seems to be a very romantic undertone between Nick and Bridget, which seems weird because he's like unfailing moral good. And then, as it turns out, that's what the entire movie is about.
Yeah. Did that not, like, seem obvious from moment one, Zach?
I mean, even when he, like, went to tip her in, like, minute 7, yeah, I was like, oh, this is weird. Like, I did not think... I thought it was going to be, like, lottery and then, like, sadness and, like, unluckiness befalls him, mm-hmm. but it was obviously the other thing. So
throughout the movie, there's a lot of scenes of like Bridget and Nick, like they clearly want us to be like, oh man, they were meant to be together.
Turns out.
And they're both they're both incredibly selfless and they keep like giving their money away, and Nick is like best friends with all the kids in the neighborhood.
Okay.
He ends up getting like wounded in the line of duty while like stopping a robbery and
didn't quit his cop job. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. He spends his whole time like in recovering, hanging out with Bridget Fonda and stuff. And yeah. So they fall in love and Rosie Perez kicks him out.
Yeah.
And they get divorced and there's this big like sensational divorce case. And you know, Nick and Bridget lose, and they're not gonna have any money, and that's when Isaac Hayes makes his return.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Well, and also the Tooch is Bridget's soon to be ex husband. He's a real piece of shit, and he also comes back when the money shows up and is like, "Hey, we're still married."
Uh huh. So. Naturally.
Yeah.
Oh, we get an up towel shot on Tucci at one point.
We do. For as little time as he's in this movie, he is naked for a surprising
amount. Oh, man. That's a Barton Fink I can get behind.
Drink twice for Barton Fink.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you knew it was gonna come up. You knew it, Zach.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's fair.
You invited me here. What did you expect? So in the process of all this, like, the only thing that Bridget Fonda has splurged on is she buys the diner that she works in.
Okay.
Yep.
And like, she sets up a table for, like, if you can't afford your meal, like, this is the table that I named after Nick Cage, and, like, you get your meal for free kind of thing.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Yeah. So, after they lose their case, and they're gonna, like, get together, and, like, we're gonna move to Buffalo, cause, and get away from the city. But yeah, they stop at her restaurant Buffalo. One last time.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Right? They stop at her restaurant, like, one last time, and Isaac Hayes is dressed as a homeless person, and they, like, let him in and feed him and, like, send him on his way and give him all the money they have. So he writes a story in the paper about how these two people who were going through, like, the worst thing that's ever happened to them, right. All they wanted to do was help someone else. So the people of New York start mailing tips to them.
That is inaccurate.
Yep. So they get, like, letter after letter after letter of, like, here's $5 from these people who said, I wish there were more people like you. And, like, yeah. And they end up making, like, $900,000, I think they say.
Well, yeah. Like, he goes to push the door open at some point, and he's like, oh, the diner door won't open, and there is a literal mountain of cards and money and shit behind it. Yeah,
and there's a real, like, Miracle on 34th Street of mail carriers marching in with bags of mail, you know?
Like,
yep.
Okay.
So they end up, they buy, you know, they pay off the diner, and they run the diner, and he becomes a cop again, and, like... And then we find out that Rosie Perez married, like, Seymour Cassell. She meets at, like, this millionaires event.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a con man. And she ends up marrying him, and he, like, bankrupts her.
Nice.
So the last thing we see is, yeah, we see her, like, riding away in a carriage with her new husband. And it's like, oh, and he drained their bank account and skipped the country. She lives with her mom now. And it's like, yeah. Well, fuck her for... I have problems with this, but anyway.
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah.
That's... Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so, 94.
Right, yeah. So yeah, it all ends like it should have. Uh-huh. Like, all the good people win, all the bad people lose. Uh-huh. Yeah.
I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
So, Zach, what do you have to say about this movie, Zach?
Yeah.
So... Before we get to ratings, I only really had one more thing.
Because I have a lot to say.
Oh, okay, good. All right. Well, let me get mine out, and then I'll go take a smoke break or something.
Sure.
Yeah.
So this movie is wonderfully 90s. Like, criminally 90s.
Uh-oh.
There, like, is literally rollerblading date.
Yeah, nice. Most importantly, there is a rollerblading scene.
Nice.
The cop cars... The jeans, the decor, everything is nice. It's great.
What are they? Are they all, like, Ford Interceptors or what?
No, they're the square ones.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was before Crown Vics got all round on the ends.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. But yeah, oh, it's so good. And it's not, like, in a weird way. It's, like, in a fun way. Yeah. And then, yeah, my only other thing is for the ratings. So, Lee, fucking take her away. If you shit on this movie, I'm going to be very disappointed in you.
So, so here's here's what I want to say about this movie, among other things. Okay, so it is an incredibly, it is an incredibly pleasant movie. Like,
okay,
I'm not sure everything how to read that, about
it. Everything about it feels like it was made for like I'm watching. Like, whatever channel doesn't have football on in the fall on a Sunday afternoon, and this is the movie they're playing.
UPN, like, yep,
yep.
Ooh, shit, yeah. No, you're not wrong. Right. It's not
RIP
like...
RIP UPN.
yeah. No, it became WB?
CW.
No, that's a different thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. UPN got folded into WB, which the then WB. Turned into the CW. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
The WB. No, you're not
dub a dub a dub.
Oh, yeah. Who could forget Michigan J Frog?
yeah, no, you're not wrong. It's not like a... like a rom-com in the sense of like only for women, but like it is basically a rom-com. Like
so so and that's kind of like another thing I wanted to like talk about. It's it feels like it's trying to be a much older movie. Like this movie plays out in the way that I think like a 40s 50s kind of like I could see Jimmy Stewart playing the Nick Cage character.
So it's like sickly sweet.
Maybe not sickly sweet, but it's very one-dimensional.
Okay,
like it's very predictable, and it, everything that happens is like, oh, of course that. Like,
yeah, all the people that you expect to, everything falls into place very neatly. With so it's like here's a movie with. Like, you have the good people on one side and the bad people on the other side.
Sure.
And something incredible but not, like, extraordinary necessarily happens. And the good people that should be together, like, know it the whole time, but they don't act on it because they're too good until someone else does something that allows them to get through. Like, it's very old-fashioned feeling. And
that's true.
Gross. I mean, actually, I do like.
Well,
I like a good old fashioned. I mean, whiskey, and...
some bitters, you know,
some,
like
some bitter sugar cube, whatever.
Yeah. But and then like the entire soundtrack is just old like standards and shit. So like I think that really plays into it too.
I don't want that.
Right.
Not like
I want hardcore death
90s.
Metal.
Yeah, why aren't they playing 90s standards?
Well, I mean, Harry Connick is in the soundtrack.
Oh, I was going to say Jeremy by Pearl Jam over and over.
Oh, yeah.
It didn't fit any of the scenes.
Wait, when did Evanescence? When was Evanescence popular?
Way later.
Oh, way later?
That was like 99, 2000.
It was like, early 2000s.
Bring me up inside.
Wow.
Can't wake up.
I'm proud that I'm the only person that couldn't deep pull an Evanescence lyric in 3 seconds.
I can't wake up.
Wake me up inside.
I can't wake up.
Save me.
So I guess what I wanted to talk about was how they treat Rosie Perez in this movie. Like, she is the worst shrew, harpy, like, awful person that ever lived. But let's break it down. Okay. So at the start of the movie, yes, their marriage isn't, like, as happy as it once was. And
well,
it's because...
At the start of the movie, their marriage is the best that it is for the entire movie, certainly.
Right, but like they also talk about how at one time they were like very in love and like really.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, it seemed kind of endearing. Like I thought they were trying to make them more realistic, where like she wants to move out of the Bronx and he's like, no, it's fine, and she's like, we need a bigger house, and he's like, we should have kids, and. And then she's like, oh, we can't afford kids, you silly asshole. And like, I don't know, it was kind of endearing.
We can't afford kids, you silly asshole.
Silly asshole.
Paraphrasing.
So,
but no,
like,
you're not wrong. Like, it was distinctly bad or worse.
Like, yeah, they don't, they're not like overtly awful to each other. They're just clearly like they're not, they don't have like an exciting relationship anymore. Sure. And maybe,
okay. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. But then here's the things that happen. They win the lottery.
Uh-huh.
And she gets real excited. And then mm-hmm. he tells her that I promised half the money to a strange woman who I just met. And she gets mad at that. That's not really something that I would be like, I would understand if someone got mad about that.
Yeah, that's a little, yeah.
I had so, not considered that when watching it because I was trapped in the magical reality that they were in. But
sure.
Like, yeah, no, you're not wrong. Like if I was like, oh my God, we can retire. And then I was like, oh my God, we can only half retire.
Yeah.
I'd be a little pissed off, I guess.
Yeah.
So then what are the awful things she does? Yeah, she wants to spend some money. But like, who wouldn't fucking spend some money if they just won the lottery?
Sure.
She spends money to redecorate their house, which, again...
Ugh, what a monster.
Why not? Right. And then one of the
big
issues
is... I bet she wants to
is...
paint everything in ox blood, too. No, ox tongue? Is that what it is? Ox tongue. Yeah.
A faux strie called ox tongue.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yep. So then... What does she get mad about? She gets mad that her husband keeps spending all this time alone with this woman that she has watched him flirt with a bunch.
Yeah, that seems...
Who he gave half of their money to.
So that's an important point, I think. You are right in that case, because Nick also... They make a point to show that he feels conflicted about it, mm-hmm. because he's obviously falling in love with her.
Yeah,
like, right.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, I get it. Like, we're supposed to be, like, we want the people who should be together to be together, and that's great.
Right.
But until the end, when she, like, is in court lying about stuff, she doesn't really do anything that's that unreasonable. Like...
Yeah,
she spends money
a
little
point,
recklessly. Like, she spends money a little recklessly. But
well, you'd expect that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't know. I just, the way they treat her in this movie is fucking awful.
Yeah. No, and that's fair. Like, I guess that's kind of what I was thinking with, like, the white man can't jump thing. Like, in that movie, she was just, like, she wanted the best for everything, but was, like, trying to convince Woody Harrelson to just, like, give up his dumb, dumb, dumb dream. Like, but in that case, she was like 100% right. And I guess in this movie, she's only like 80% right, maybe.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, the ideal outcome.
That's a fair point.
The ideal outcome of this movie is they win the lottery. And then it's like, after a little bit, it's like, you know, I don't know if a relationship works anymore. He's like, you're right. We should talk about this like adults.
No.
That's not what happens, but, you know.
No, never. Of course not. I'll see you in hell.
Yeah, pretty much.
You know, I was almost gonna do like a Rosie Perez voice then, but I'm not gonna do that because
no,
don't do that.
No.
Also, I don't know if you could. I mean, if you did, you'd have to name foods that start with Q, I think. But
oh, what is a quahog, Alex? Yeah.
And a quince and a I'm glad doing that thing we just did right there, neither of us did a Rosie Perez voice. Like,
yeah,
this is good.
That's true.
This is good.
Yes. Okay. Anyway, I just wanted to say that about this movie.
Oh, sure. Sure.
It's,
that's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair. Yeah. Okay. Well, I don't know. Do you have anything else, Lee, or should we get to the things?
Just two quick things. One, like, Isaac Hayes is the narrator and, like, this magical newspaper man who convinces the world to send the money. His character's name is literally Angel.
It is. That's true. Yeah.
I don't like that.
Also, his character is, like, rather insignificant.
What a
bummer. I mean, well, he plays an important part in the story, but he's not in the movie very much. Like,
no, not really.
Just barely. Yeah.
All right. Well,
and the other thing I want to mention is that I don't know if this is a 90s thing, if this is a rom-com thing or what, but just like Runaway Bride, this is a movie that posits a New York City in which
not only does everyone read the paper every day, but strangers gather around reading it aloud to each other on the street. Like,
yes.
Yeah, I mean,
hanging on everything.
Wait. When we all used to live in the same town, like, that's a thing that I did. Did you guys not participate in that?
No, I wasn't part of the paper boys.
I don't recall being there all that often.
Okay.
No, it might as well be like 1943. Like, the paper is the only thing that matters. It's very weird.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, I was just looking at the IMDb, and like in the quotes section, I think whoever put the IMDb quotes for this movie together took some artistic license, because all of the Nick Cage character lines have exclamation points at them in the quotes, and he definitely did not deliver them that way. So
yeah, no, he had remarkable restraint for considering the movies before and after this by like mere months.
Do you think he was
amazing?
Like, do you think he was on lewds or something that just kind of brought him down? Or
he might have just been exhausted.
Well, maybe. Yeah, I don't know. He's done this like a couple other times, like Moonstruck an early one where he plays like a semi-reasonable character.
Sorry, and Zach. Zach, just really quick, have you fucking seen Moonstruck?
Have you seen the world's number one Nick Cage fan? I think I've seen it once. I wasn't paying a ton of attention.
Have you seen his performance in Moonstruck? Because restrained,
I guess not.
Is not the word I would use.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, well, also the scale is the Nick Cage scale.
Yeah,
so,
a good point, Lee. You got to respect that Cage scale.
Yeah.
No, I stand by this. That movie is a red hot on the Cage scale. Like,
okay.
Well, we need. All right. So, are we gonna have somebody fake it, or are we just gonna have to like rewatch it for a special episode?
I mean, why not both? We haven't given anything away here. Yeah, let's do both.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, I don't know, like, later on, like, Weatherman, I think, is the most recent example of, like, where he plays a human being.
Oh, I would totally agree with that.
Like, remarkably well, given his actual human characteristics.
I agree. Given his pyramid in New Orleans? Or...
Yeah, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And his alcoholism and his whatnot, yeah. Yeah.
It is eagle-shaped hair. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It gets pretty nuts.
This is, you're right. Like, pre-Weatherman, this is definitely the most least Nick Cage role.
The most least
the most
Nick Cage
least,
role.
Yes.
Yep.
Uh-huh, correct. Uh-huh. Yep, yep.
Great.
So if we're talking about the Nick Cage scale, we've got Moonstruck at red hot, and we've got It Could Happen to You at most least Nick Cage.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we should also mention the Nick Cage scale starts on 2, it goes up, and then there's a triangle in the middle, and then it ends on a letter. Like, it's just fucking all over the place. There's no telling where anything lands, really.
There's like phase shifts. Like, there's just another like line coming off in one direction.
Yeah,
for when he turns into
non-linear?
A gas sometimes. It's very confusing.
Yeah. Non-linear doesn't even begin to describe the Nick Cage.
There is an x-axis, a y-axis, a z-axis, and a rectangle axis.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not even an axis. They just call it rectangle. Yeah. It's a whole thing.
XYZ and rectangle.
Yeah, and Vampire's Kiss is on the end of the rectangle.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I can't wait to talk about Vampire's Kiss sometime.
Oh, I hope
get
there.
Woof.
Yeah.
So was this movie successful?
Oh, shit, that's a good point.
Yeah, that's a great question. Hold on.
Yeah. Monetarily, I don't know. So I guess we can start with, I'll do the ratings while Lee does some computers.
It made about $38 million, but I don't see a production budget, and honestly, I don't think it probably didn't cost very much to make.
Oh, no, it did not cost $38
million.
No, for sure.
No way.
Yeah. So let's say yes.
Unless the entire diner was CGI.
1994.
Yeah,
well, you know,
yeah.
The
well,
chef at the diner was Dexter Jetster, so.
He was from episode 2?
Mm-hmm. Oh, dear. Yeah.
I'm just upset that we both know the name of that diner owner in episode 2.
Oh, it was the right, so it was the 39th most successful movie in 1994.
94 was a tough year, though, wasn't it? Isn't that Jurassic Park? Yeah.
Park that was 93, I think.
Oh shit!
Was it? Oh,
Forrest okay. Gump, Lion King, True Lies, The Santa Claus, Forrest The Flintstones, Gump. Dumb and Dumber, yeah. Clear and Present Danger, Speed, The Mask, Pulp Fiction. That's the top.
Jesus
10.
Christ!
1 second. The Flintstones was like 4.
Yeah, yeah.
That 5.
Surprised me. Yeah.
Oh.
Wait, didn't that have a Baldwin in it?
It had the worst
the sequel
one, Steve.
Did.
Stephen Baldwin.
So the Flintstones
famed
had
enemy of the show, Stephen Baldwin. Apparently.
Yeah, yeah.
Famed,
the Flintstones
famed
had
social
had,
conservative nightmare, Stephen Baldwin.
That's true. The first one had John Goodman and Rick Moranis.
Oh, Rick Moranis, not Steve Baldwin. Yeah.
And the Wait. Sequel had Mark Addy and yeah. Stephen Baldwin.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I didn't know there was a squeakquel for that.
Oh, there sure
yeah,
was.
Called
it was called
Viva,
Rock, Viva
Vegas. Rock Vegas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. And that was the fifth best movie of 94?
Well, the first one. The first one was the fifth best movie
of
94.
Yeah. Not Viva Rock Vegas. Come on.
God, let's
You hope. Know who else is Oof. Is in the first one? Oh, Rosie so O'Donnell.
People. Yep. As Elizabeth Betty.
I thought Shue. You were going to say Rosie Perez. I was... Oh.
No. Halle Berry, Kyle MacLachlan.
Yeah. Kyle,
God damn.
Kyle MacLachlan played Fred Flintstone's boss.
And one of the main villains.
Yeah.
Wait, Kyle MacLachlan of Twin Peaks?
Yep,
maybe?
That's the one.
Yeah, yeah.
Shit. Wow, okay.
Oh, yeah, Elizabeth Taylor was in it.
Yeah. She was Wilma's mother, I think.
Alive, yes. Elizabeth Taylor?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah.
What?
White diamonds.
Holy shit.
These have always yeah. brought me luck.
Oh, I mean, that, yeah. They're just wearing the souls out on that one. That's still on TV.
It sure is.
fun fact about Elizabeth Taylor. Famously, she had really, like, stunning eyelashes. Uh-huh. And it's because, due to a genetic condition, she had 2 sets of eyelashes. And it
oh.
was... It was incredibly painful, so she lived her entire life in agony.
Oh my Whoa. God. Well, besides, you know, being Elizabeth Taylor, yeah. Jesus. On several levels, I think.
Woof.
Whew. Wow.
So, yeah. 1994.
Yeah, what a year.
What a year.
Holy shit.
It's getting,
okay.
94 was getting really close to peak, like, tight 90s, because in 1995 all movies were 95 minutes long to create synergy with Windows 95.
Oh yeah. Now yeah, I heard that once.
Illuminati. Wow, shit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was gonna say, like, I mean, I can think of many movies that came out around there, like, so we mentioned Jurassic Park, Titanic.
No, Titanic, I mean, is later.
No,
is
yeah.
it
Titanic? Okay. Is like 97,
I believe. So
okay,
yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, man, movies were good back then.
Oh yeah,
we should
I mean,
do one of these.
Independence Day was 96.
ID 4.
Yeah,
wait, yeah, ID 4. Man, and not the sequel.
Did you guys? Oof. Did think... either of you guys see the sequel? Because
I
would love to talk about that.
I did.
I saw it also. Oh boy,
it was, let's say, forgettable, because I forgot it.
I forgot most of it, yeah.
Yeah.
It's got some bloomage, but it's not bloomage enough to attract me as a tropical bird.
Well, and, yeah. and we're in the nostalgia, like, sweet spot, too. And so, like, we're the audience. It should have worked. I don't know.
Oh, it sucked.
Yeah, it was bad.
But there's a... There's a subplot in that movie that I have some theories about. But anyway,
oh,
we
okay.
should finish all this right. episode up.
Yeah,
yeah, we probably should.
All right, so give me some ratings, boys.
Yeah. All right, so IMDb, 6.3.
Okay.
With just under 30,000 ratings.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So it seems conservative-ish, I would say.
It's a real Sunday afternoon crowd rating this movie.
Yeah, yeah. Real matinee crowd. I don't know. Lee, you want to go first?
Yeah. So, like, the real movie is, like, totally pleasant to watch, super ignorable. 6.3 feels right-ish. Seth?
Uh-huh.
Well...
Uh-huh.
You're a real son of a bitch.
Yeah, I am. You so. Came really close with mentioning ancient Icelandic because it is Old English. Like, I mean...
I didn't want to be, like... I didn't want to be cliche and say Old English, so I thought I'd bring some runes into it, but...
Yeah, yeah. Well, you came quite close.
Anyway. You son of a bitch. Right. Be that as it may, I do like a good kind of fantastical romp.
Yeah, who don't?
I like a good mixed media kind of movie. Let's.
You like some paper mache in a movie?
Yeah. Let's paper mache. Let's throw up a 7.3.
Okay.
We'll give you a point higher. Right.
Okay.
So this will get to my last point that I had. And I think the one that I felt most strongly about the whole time. This movie is very strange for me because I like truly and deeply and almost sexually love Nick Cage.
Uh-huh. Okay.
This is like not a traditional Nick Cage movie, as we were speaking of. Like, he doesn't go over the top. There's very little action. It's like, whatever. But I genuinely enjoyed this movie. Like, really liked it. That, like, they don't make movies like this anymore. I think Lee kind of made this point. Like, it's sort of a nostalgic, like, all the good people win, and it's, like, a feel-good time.
Yeah, but there are no, like, inexplicable twists, which is all I really care about.
Yeah, I mean, in like, today's movie culture, like, that is the thing that makes good movies.
Or,
I agree.
Or Seth's movie culture, forever.
Mm-hmm. It's a subgenre, for sure. Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. But, like, the 90s were, like, full of optimism. And like, I just liked it. I just want to live in that forever. Like, it's
budget
so nice.
Surpluses will do that for you and low unemployment.
Yeah, like
rates,
the only one in forever. Yeah. Right, exactly. So yeah, when I was thinking about this movie after the fact, I was like, shit, am I an old person? Like, am I the guy that looks back to a 20-year-old movie and goes, ooh, they were better back then?
You literally just did.
Yeah,
I think so. So yeah, I don't know. Yeah, again, while this wasn't like a traditional Nick Cage, I really enjoyed this.
It's a good watch. Yeah.
It is a good watch. Like, I highly recommend it. I'd say like a solid 8 on this one for sure. Like, way up there. Yeah. That said, Seth's thing was really good. Like, it had Gremlins aspects to it.
Yeah, it did.
Had a lot of like fun mystery and stuff. So like, I think I'm gonna tie him this time. I think Seth also gets an 8.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right.
So
I guess
that's an aggregate win.
Yeah, I'm satisfied with that.
Well done.
Yeah.
All right. So what we got in store next time?
So next week, Lee's doing a movie I don't think any of us have ever heard about. None of the audience has heard about
it. I've never seen it. Nope.
Yeah, I've never even, like, nothing. Sharky's Machine? Sharky's Machine. as if that's not enough, we haven't yet watched it, obviously. Well, Seth and I.
No, no.
The only thing I know about it is it stars Dirty Birdie, Burt Reynolds. And as I recall, the cover is like, there might be a car. And
don't
like
tell
a computer.
Me.
No, I could be making this up. I don't recall. Mm. But yeah, it's going to be a weird one for sure.
Yeah, we've got Dirty Birdie for our Dirty 30th episode.
Exactly.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. I forgot the only pun. Yes.
Yep. I was wondering if you were going to get to that, Zach. So
No. Yeah. Turns out no.
It is my understanding that Sharky's machine is just one in a like unending stream of like Burt Reynolds mid-career no money action movies. So
wonderful.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah.
So we did like a peak Nick Cage, and now we're gonna do like an anti-peak Burt Reynolds, I guess.
Yeah. Well, let me just say this, fellas, I've got something for you, and I could watch this movie tomorrow, and it would not change what I was gonna tell you. So
okay, good man.
Lovely. Yep. Excellent. Cool. Well, I guess that'll do it. True to his word. Seth did it best.
Seth did do it best.
I'm perfect. Never forget it.